I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Me and my guest, Kellyanne, host of KMRD's Midnight Ideas. Welcome in, Kellyanne.
Thank you, Dream Queen. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy.
Even if I cry, I'm happy to be here.
Especially when, yeah. I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for being willing to be vulnerable and bringing the feels.
I somehow thrive in vulnerability.
Yes.
I think we distance ourselves from it a lot, and I think there's strength to be had in just letting it get you.
Yeah. So you all suck these tears in for a little bit. I see you holding back. I see you.
A little bit. I can talk clearly.
Well, if you need a break, you just tell me and I can babble on. I love babbling on in Babylon. You listen to the show. And then we will get to reading the poem. Folks, if you are new to the show, we've been reading Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. In the second hour here, we have In the Cab Book Club that's been going on for a little more than a year. And we are closing up The Prophet with the poem on death. And Kellyanne, offered to show up here and share some of your story. So would you want to introduce yourself to the audience and talk a little bit about your show, what you like to do in life? Or?
I mean, I could say a little bit about myself, but yeah. I do have trouble being perceived. So hi, I'm I'm Kellyanne. I usually stick to music on my show. Sometimes I do go into very specific topics and talk more. But I live here in Madrid. I think we may be from the same crop. Did you arrive in 2013?
Yes. Yep. I love that. Uh-huh. The crop.
Like me, you, a few of us all arrived around the same time.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I don't know. There's kinship there from our moments that we arrived and grew to know each other. And honestly, I feel like I'm only just now starting to really get into Dream Queen a bit.
That's true.
I have moments with you, but yeah. Anyway, I'm going to talk about you because I have trouble being perceived.
I'm not going to delve too deep here into you. I mean, I want to, but I'm like, what do you mean by trouble being perceived?
Well, sometimes I forget. I like to observe. I like to participate, but I don't like to be in the spotlight.
Ooh.
When I do push myself out there, I'm glad for it. And so to talk about myself is kind of hard. But yeah, well, I'm a writer. I'm a DJ here at KMRD. And I'm a mother, a daughter, a sister, a lover, a wife, amateur filmmaker. I like to create. I think there's a lot of power in creating. I think, we are creation. So continuing on creation in whatever way that it manifests for us, I think, is a way of tapping into the greater self. And that's about me. That's all about me. And I'm going to say about me.
No, you have a lot. Look, we have 45 more minutes to go, maybe 35 if we're going to let DJ Evermore get in here a little early. So I don't have a whole bunch of music on deck, so you're going
to
talk.
I'm ready to talk. So listen, I sat there yesterday and I was like, I'm just going to talk to the wall. I'm going to put on the stopwatch. I'm going to talk to the wall and about some of the things that I want to talk about and see if I have enough. And I stopped for like a drink of water and I was at 47 minutes. I said, okay, so I can talk.
All right. Well, then I'm going to sit back and let you go. I'm going to probe you. I like to probe. I'm holding back right now.
I mean, I want this to be a conversation too. I was like, that's what I was telling myself yesterday. I'm not going to be talking to the wall. I'm going to be talking with Dream Queen about this. So
some people say talking to a Taurus is like talking to a wall sometimes, but I got too much Gemini in me. I'm like, no, and Sagittarius, I'm like, let's go. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, Jada, shut up. But I do want to say to the audience, you and I know this, but you approached me last week or 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago. And you said, I heard, I'd like to come on and talk about death.
Mm-hmm.
So what inspired you to want to come on and share yourself like this?
Well, again, the vulnerability is huge when we discuss death. But I feel like in our society, there is so much resistance to address it in a healthy way, especially. And then, of course, it often does come as a surprise when someone passes unexpectedly. But even still, people can be so death avoidant. And I think that manifests itself in so many different ways in our culture. you know, the accumulation of wealth, the hoarding of resources, the holding off of access to resources, all of that, I think it all can be led back to a fear of impermanence and death. And a lot of things that we see that are common in our culture are, I think, not exactly the hallmarks of a society that does believe in eternal life. Mm-hmm. You know, and even though a lot of people, the first people who will tell you that, you know, we're a Christian nation and, you know, there's life eternal for us, I don't see that practiced in the living around us much.
It's really interesting about that. It's like they don't have faith in their own eternal life, or they know they're sinners and that they don't want us coming back. I mean, if you believe in eternal life and, you know, heaven, and then you still are scared to die, then says something about what you perceive. Yes. So do you want to, should we read the poem first or dive right into your personal experience?
Maybe you go ahead.
No, you go ahead. No, you have 47 minutes of material. You tell me what to do.
I mean, if you want to read the poem, to set up our listeners a little bit, because I think I do have some things to say about the specific poem, but
yes, because I feel like you have so much to offer just from what we've done in prep. Uh-huh. And I thought, well, I don't need to read it again because we read it last week, but I want to read it with you, and I want to fill in people who might not have been here last week or caught up. So I'm going to do it not as quickly as possible, but quickly. So we'll just go to the poem right now. All right, folks, so if you're just joining us or if you're not familiar with the prophet, I'm going to do my little brief synopsis real quick. We're with Al-Mustafa and the villagers of Orphalese. Al-Mustafa has been exiled there for 12 years and sees his ship on the horizon arriving through the mists. And I like to say the mists because it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor. So here it comes, and he's on his way down to the seawall, kind of sadly, not really wanting to leave, but really needing to leave. And he's been observing the town from his own vantage point, sort of a recluse, if you will. And the people are asking him not to leave, but he say, I got to go. And so they're like, well, talk to us. And the high priestess Almitra comes out of the temple, outside of the temple, into the square, into nature, and says, please, if you're leaving, tell us about ourselves so that we may hold your wisdoms and tell them to our children, and they will never be forgotten. And Al-Mustafa says, I can't tell you anything that you don't already know within your hearts, but I'll chat. He's probably got some Sagittarius in there. So finally, then Almitra spoke, saying, we would ask now of death. And he said, you would know the secret of death. But how shall you find it unless you seek it in the heart of life? The owl whose night-bound eyes are blind unto the day cannot unveil the mystery of light. If you would indeed behold the spirit of death, open your heart wide unto the body of life. For life and death are one, even as the river and the sea are one. In the depth of your hopes and desires lies your silent knowledge of the beyond. And like seeds dreaming beneath the snow, your heart dreams of spring. Trust the dreams, for in them is hidden the gate to eternity. Your fear of death is but the trembling of the shepherd when he stands before the king whose hand is to be laid upon him in honor. Is the shepherd not joyful beneath his trembling that he shall wear the mark of the king? Yet is he not more mindful of his trembling? For what is it to die but to stand naked in the wind and to melt into the sun? And what is it to cease breathing but to free the breath from its restless tides that it may rise and expand and seek God unencumbered? Only when you drink from the river of silence shall you indeed sing. And when you have reached the mountaintop, then you shall begin to climb. And when the earth shall claim your limbs, then shall you truly dance. thanks for the dance. Khalil Gibran, the prophet on death.
So one thing that I think stands out to me in this poem, but also throughout the book, is his mention of breath and the wind. And if you look at the root for the word spirit, it comes from the Latin for breathe. Okay, so if we see the great spirit as the wind all around us, ever present, the wind carries things through all the generations. It's all around us. It brings the warmth. It helps things grow. We bring it into our bodies. We're these tiny little, you know, corporeal things that breathe in this wind. And once it becomes breath, that's our spirit in
us.
Is
it esprit? Is that the
Latin? Respiration. I mean, we come aspira.
Yes.
Yes. So I see the connection there. You know, it took him, so Al-Mustafa was there 12 years. It took Gibran, what, almost 12 years to write?
11 years to write the book. Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't think he chose his words lightly, but also the mention of dreams, to trust the dreams. Trust the dreams, for in them is hidden the gate to eternity. And I have experienced visitation from some of my closest departed, and all but one of the ones where they were physical visitations were in the dream or woken from a dream to have them with me. So I strongly believe for myself that dreams, the dream world, the subconscious, again, the communal knowing, consciousness, what lies beneath that, the subconscious, is and can be a gateway for communing with the divine and the spirit that unites us all. So I love that he mentions dreams so much. I love that your guest last week also touched on the dreams as well. I dream about my father a lot. I dream about my best friend, but very specific. I can dive into a visitation from my best friend who passed 18 years ago in May. Later, if we have time, but I do want to talk about what I was talking to you about, where, you know, living, where he mentions living and dying, life and death, they're the same, they're connected. I have a very deeply personal relationship with that notion, and I feel grief in itself. I think there's an importance in differentiating between grief and death and our attitudes for both, because I think while they are obviously connected, our experiences with grief can shape how we face our mortality. And it can also help us, well, grief itself is sacred, I think, because it can help us face the fact that we're crossing when it's time. So my father, my adoptive father, the man who raised me from the age of two, he...
Can we say his name?
Rick.
Rick.
Yes. He was diagnosed terminal cancer, fourth stage, in April of 2019, and he passed in September. So it was a very short period, but he did try to do the chemo and everything so that he could be here as long as possible. So my experience watching him face the mortality shifted my perspective even further. I think every time we are close to somebody who goes through that, so what I find interesting for Al-Mustafa here is he sees his ship coming through the mist. You know, we don't always see our ship coming. Mm. Sometimes it arrives in the darkness of night with no known approach.
Oh, you're taking it to the next level. So you think Mustafa, like, are you implying that that's a, like, his death barge?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
I never even thought about it like that.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. So he sees his ships and he's going down. What do? When we find out someone we know and love is dying, we stop our work. We run to them.
Stop trying to make me cry now. I'm going to make other people cry.
We put down our tools. We call out to each other. We say, this is happening. We rush to them. And what is one of the quotes from the intro? He says, the sea that calls all things unto her calls me, and I must embark. For to stay is to freeze and crystallize and be bound in a mold. And I think grief can bind the spirit, our spirit, the bereft, as well as those parting. And I'll touch back on that whenever I talk about the visitation from my friend, if I have time for that. But, you know, I saw a lot of that death denial that permeates our society when my father was diagnosed. You know, I was living here in New Mexico. Him and my mother live in Oklahoma. So I went out to Oklahoma a lot over that summer. He had chemo, I think, every 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks. I was there every three. I was here 2 weeks, there 2 weeks for most of that summer. And my mom couldn't drive, so I would leave my son, Conrad, with her. And I would take him to his appointments. And 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, break of dawn till 4 or 5 p.m., I was next to him in that chair while he got his infusions, trying his best to be here as long as possible. And first it was, you know, little things like, you got to do the paperwork, you know, like just having that conversation. Like, I remember it was almost a fight between me and my mom about, you know, there's stuff that's got to be lined up, you know. There was a resistance, and I totally understand that they were together for decades, you know, and to be that close to someone and to see their ship coming, you know, I can't imagine that. And I don't know if I'll ever know that, but maybe I will. But, you know, just try. I had to be the one to be saying, you know, there are things that need to be put in order. And then sitting with him in the chair and like the social worker or patient advocate or whatever coming around to talk to us about signing the DNR. She said, so seriously, if you're in this room and you collapse, do you want us to try to resuscitate you? And she laid out the statistics, like for a completely healthy person, if we resuscitate you, these are the odds of living a healthy life after that. You are not that completely healthy person. This is what might happen if we do that. And he said, I'll just call my wife and ask her. And I said, Dad, you can't do that to Mom. You can't, you know. So watching him go through that, and then he had to get a signed document from the doctor that stated he is 100% dying, so that he could hand that into work, because he had to retire early. He was just a few months away from retiring, and he used up all of his sick time to receive those treatments. And in the end, some of his coworkers wound up donating some of their vacation time and sick time so that he could meet that deadline, because he ran out of vacation and sick time to lead him up to the point where he could meet his retirement. And it was just like a matter of weeks before he passed that deadline. So seeing him receive that paperwork, watch him read it, and the realization, you know, it was a whole new level of facing the truth for him in that moment. I wished in that moment and all through that summer that we had, as a society, a much healthier, open dialogue and support system for the dying. You know, like, we don't talk about it until somebody is. We don't face the things, you know, just the paperwork side of things, you know, often until after or just leading up to. But there's a spiritual preparation that I feel we can miss out on. And that's why I think the grief and the funeral rites are very important, because that can at least help bridge that gap a little bit. But in the moment, when you're sitting there with family that you love and want to support, and you want to talk about it, but you don't want to, you know, suddenly it's taboo. It's a hard thing. It's hard to process. And, you know, I think it was even harder for them, because every time I came to visit, so did his grandson that he wasn't going to get to see grow up, you know. And, you know, I was in the room with him when he passed. We got the call. People were calling, just like, I'm Mustafa, it's happening, you should be here, drop what we're doing, go to the hospital, be with him. I got there the day before he passed, and Conrad was with us in the room as well, and he was mostly, you know, non-responsive, sleeping. And at one point, Mom was like, you can sit down and talk to him, he might be able to hear you. And I said, Dad, I'm here, you know, I'm here with you. And he woke up, and he had this wild look in his eyes, and he reached out and he grabbed me, and he was like, I need to let you know that she knows and I know and it's okay. And I was like, what the hell is he talking about? I was like, who are you talking about? Who knows what? He's like, it's okay. I know. She knows. We know each other. It's okay. And I just thought, I did not know what to make of that in that moment. And it broke my heart that he did not have the ability to articulate any further what it was he was trying to say. But that was the last thing I ever heard him say in that room completely, was him trying to get that across to me. And it just seemed so urgent and deliberate that the next day he passed. He stayed sleeping. And it was the next day that he passed. Conrad was in the room with us, and something that stands out to me and helped transform my relationship with death and what happens when we die is just moments after he passed, Conrad looked over at his body and he said, "Where'd Papa go?" You know, for an almost three-year-old to realize that, yes, his body's right here, he looks asleep, but who he is not here. You know, where'd he go? That solidified for me that there is an essence within us that goes on to somewhere else once our bodies are worn out and done. And it's 6 days after his passing, I found out that I was pregnant with my daughter, Vega.
Oh my God. So you didn't, I'm like, is my mic even still on? So you didn't know, because you told me in text that there was this moment, but you didn't know you were pregnant when he said that?
No.
Oh my Jesus. I was kind of gathering that when you were telling the story in this way. Like, is she leading up to the punchline that you didn't even
know? I didn't know. But I found out 6 days. So like my mom, you know, she'd been focused on caring for him, and a lot of things went by the side, you know, as they do. And so Matt traveled back to New Mexico after his burial, and I stayed behind like two or three weeks to help my mom get to some doctor's appointments, get her dog to the vet, things like that, just to sort of support her and how I could, and get her to places that she'd been missing. And I walked into the vet's office and I just got all nauseous. I was like, oh my God, I have not felt this way since, gosh. And then I was like, oh, since I was pregnant with Conrad. So, yeah, I went to the drugstore on the way home and got a test, and yep.
How did you even drive anywhere after that? Like, I probably would have laid down in my car. I don't even imagine. Because then you're connecting dots.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's the grief, so... You know, that was all through the beginning of COVID, as the pregnancy progressed. I came back home. I was so tired. I was nauseous up until delivery with Vega. I was wiped out a lot. Also, the grief was making me pretty lethargic as well. And, you know, but as it progressed, I thought, this is a girl, you know. This is a girl, and I think that's what he was telling me, is they met in the ether. They met in the ether, and I don't need to worry about him not knowing who she's going to be and what her life will be like, because he's here, and he knows, and he saw it all, and she saw it all, and it's all good. And then, you know, I did find out that it was a girl, and that just every moment... You know, every couple of months there was just like further evidence that told me in my heart that that's what he was trying to say. Will I ever know for sure? Probably when I die, maybe, you know, but like I choose to believe that that's what it was, you know. And I think, you know, as in the prophet where he mentions that life and death are one and the same, in my experience, I remember having a talk with Gail Snyder after Conrad was born, and I told her about the presence of ancestors in the room during my labor with him and how weird it was, because I didn't really understand what was going on. So my labors are long. They don't let you eat when you show up.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so when you go to the hospital, they don't let you eat when you're in labor. So with Conrad, I labored at the hospital for 34 hours, no food.
What, so what did they give you, like an IV or what?
I had fluids. I had IV fluids, water, saline solution or whatever.
That's terrible. I mean, I'm sure they do it because there's like a medical reason. Yeah, all kinds of reasons.
I guess if they like have to do a C-section, there's a chance that they could like cut through some digestive tract. I don't know. But so I feel like, you know, fasting, unintentionally fasting, may have brought about some... veil thinning. But I can remember, so he was born at 6:16 in the morning, and I pushed for over three hours. And it was during that intense transition and into pushing where I began to hear like the shuffling of feet and the hush of voices in the room. Now, it was only the midwife, my husband, and me, and some music playing in the room, but I could sense, I can be asleep and I can sense when someone walks in the room. They might not make any noise, but I know that I am very sensitive to presence. And it wasn't until after that I realized, you know, I was surrounded. So I wasn't like beyond, they talk about going beyond the veil or lifting of the veil. How I described it to Gail is like, I was wrapped in the veil. I was surrounded by the people who were there for me in the veil. And I was wrapped in it, you know, in those moments. And it was, I call it a dance with death. Giving birth, you come so close to dying sometimes. And some people, you know, still do, despite all of our medical interventions. A lot of people still pass away bringing life. It is such a precarious and delicate thing. And so I anticipated that a bit with the birth of my daughter. You know, that was peak COVID. That was, you know, it was May 2020. I didn't even know if my husband was going to be allowed to join me at the hospital until like a week before, and he had to take a COVID test and isolate. They kept me in the ER until my second COVID test came back positive. It was all very weird and very isolated that whole time leading up to that.
Your second test came up positive?
No, negative. Sorry, did I say positive?
Yeah, you did.
Sorry. So they wanted to make sure that I wasn't positive before they let me up into the labor ward, because they had a separate respiratory ward for positive mothers. So they needed to know where I needed to go and how I needed to be treated. So I was in like this isolated space in the ER waiting on this test. So, you know, the hospital felt even more empty, is what I'm saying, whenever I gave birth to Vega. It's like no visitors allowed, only my one support partner. When I was giving birth to Conrad, I could hear other people, you know, giving birth, babies crying, things like that. It was very different, but we had a lot of music on. With Vega, I labored for 45 hours at the hospital, and I was in labor before I went because it was a very delayed, I had complications. There was too much water. She was floating away from the canal and not engaging and putting the pressure where it needed to be. Eventually, they had to break my waters after like 38 hours in the hospital of laboring. I was, you know, I was having the need to push contractions, but like things just were not lining up because of the water. She was just floating. She was just in her little flotation chamber.
You said this was May when she's a Taurus?
Yeah.
I was 2 weeks late. There's nothing. We just want to chill. It's nice in there.
There's no rushing her. Seriously, you cannot rush this child. You say, hurry up, Vega, put her shoes on. She just stares at you and starts to go slow motion. And like it's just, you cannot tell her we gotta hurry. You gotta move things on. She lives on her own time and takes the time that she wants, and that's just how she is. But so we, you know, I'm a DJ, my husband's a DJ. We prepared hours, days of music to play for us during labor and birth and after in the hospital. Plus, it helps drown out all the beeping and stuff too. At the moment when Vega was born, the song that came on, we just had some songs on shuffle, was Here in Spirit by Jim James of My Morning Jacket. And, you know, I also, like I said, with Conrad, I experienced that feeling of we are not alone. Like, at first, you know, it was an eerie thing showing up at the hospital with so much, you know, such an empty parking lot. And like empty waiting, no one in the waiting room. You had to like call ahead, and then they brought you into a separate room. It was all very, very, very isolated. But we were not alone in that room. There was more than just me and my husband and the midwife. It was a full house. And when that song came on, I took it as a sign. My father was there with us, because it says, Well, you're going to play that song.
I'm going to close the show with it. But okay. For the folks who might be listening later on the podcast, they won't be able to hear the song because the copyright issues like that. So please save it. And if you want to catch the whole show, go over to In the Cab Radio on Mixcloud, and you can get the whole show with music, and you can skip around and everything like that. Links are at In the Cab Radio on Linktree. Mm. Please, though, I'm looking forward to listening to that song later on.
Okay, so, I mean, he says, like, with no compromise, go out and be who you are. Go and get what you want. And when the work is done, you can come back to the light and celebrate with your life and dance, become one with the light. And if you don't reach out, if you don't speak out, we can't hear it. Our love is always here in spirit. Mm. Okay, so to me, you know, like that has resonated with me so much over the years. And I heard that song so many times before. But in that moment, it had such a different meaning to me, and it was a sign to me that, yes, we are here with you. Your Father is here with you. And I have taken to talking to the dead, not like, you know, sitting down and have a conversation, but something comes up, I speak it. I used to just write it down, or I would like think it. But no, I think there's a lot more power in just, you know, if you speak, hey, I'm talking to you and this is going on and I want your guidance, you know, the breath, the breath. Well, your breath is your communication with the spirit that connects us all. And I took that to heart and I still do. And I use it. I talked to my dog who died in March. I talk to her. I say goodnight to her every night. You know, I talk to my dad, especially when if I'm having a hard time or when I'm scared. When I had surgery 7 weeks ago, that was on his birthday.
Wow.
So I had to talk with him. I was whispering in the little operating holding room that they have you in before they bring you to the OR. You know, I was like, people might have thought I was losing it, or maybe I was praying, but, I was talking.
Those folks in hospitals, they see and hear a whole lot of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's wild what they experience. Was that predetermined? Did you request that date for surgery?
No, they called me and said, your surgery is on this day at this time. Be there by this time. I knew I was going to be having surgery, but I didn't know when. They just said, we'll call you with the date.
Wow.
And that was it. Yeah. So... yeah, I feel like there's all these little signs out there that tell us our, you know, I don't think they're like bound to us like in a negative way, but we have that connection. I kind of like to think that whenever we pass in our present lives, in our living lives, the connections that we make are what life's all about. How we use what we have to help the people, the love that we share, the relationships that we build, the connections that we make. Really profound stuff. We need to connect with them again in the spirit life once we all pass, before we can all become, you know, dissolved into the wind. I think there is a spiritual bond that holds those spirits together until we can be properly rejoined. And, you know, like you said, the people in the hospital, they talk about, you know, all the things that they see, talking to people who weren't there. I'm pretty sure my mom mentioned my dad was talking to an uncle that had passed. People, you know, that's their seafarers on the ship in the mist.
Man, Kellyanne, you over here blowing my mind with your old midnight ideas. So y'all can listen to Kellyanne on KMRD. If you're local, you know the deal. KMRD.fm is the live stream. 7 to 8 p.m. on Mondays.
Yeah.
It's your tagline on the website. What is it? You said, tell me what keeps you
what
up.
What keeps you up at night, yeah.
This is going to keep me up. Because I just want to just drift off and think about all of these beautiful things that you're saying and the serendipity. And, you know, I need a new word because I don't believe serendipity does anything justice. Just the unveiling of the connections of everything, so deep, you know. Yeah. I was there helping my mom escort my grandmother through hospice and end of life, and she did speak with spirits that weren't there, and we weren't really sure. And things became clearer to me several years later. This was also 2019. Mm-hmm. And things became clearer to me later when I started reading this book called Many Lives, Many Masters. Mm-hmm. And it's about a psychologist who was brought into the realm of past lives by trying to help a client that was referred to him. She was having a whole bunch of chronic psychological issues, and he was doing hypnotherapy. And so he took her all the way back to when she was 3, and it still wasn't helping anything. I mean, the woman was feeling like she was being choked. She was feeling like she had to sleep in her closet. She was having some relationship issues that you couldn't get to root. She was leading a life. She was a technician at a hospital. They met at the hospital where they worked, and another doctor referred her to him. And so she was a technically minded person, both feet on the ground, but was having a whole lot of issues. And he's like, well, you know, we've gone back to 3 years old. I can't go any further. But he said, why not? Let's just try it. And he said, do you remember anything before this? She slips into a past life memory, mm-hmm. and starts talking from this aspect of being this person in this other life. And he's like, what? And then it repeats and it repeats. And the book is called Many Lives, Many Masters, because in the course of the therapy, it evolved from her past life recollection. And he recorded it. He has her voice on tape saying these stories, his voice asking the questions. Then it turns into the period between... He could tell when she was dying in that previous life, and he would ask her some key questions, and then she started to get better. And then she left consciousness altogether, and another voice came through and started telling him about his life. And these are the ascended masters. Okay. And then there's one point where in the book, she's saying, you know, there's all these eyes. You know, and my grandmother was saying that at one point in her sundowners. Mm-hmm. She was like, you know, to my mom, Paula, what are all these eyes looking at me? And we're like, friend, you're fine. And it's like, no, all these eyes. And me being, you know, who I am, I'm like, I wonder what she's seeing and doing. And when, you know, 3 years or 4 years later, I think this was last year that I'm reading this book that was loaned to me. I was listening to the audiobook. So there's a trip hearing, you know, this kind of square white dude's voice, like, and then this and this, and it's very factful. But then, you know, he's saying stuff like this, and I'm like, my grandmother saw the eyes.
Yeah.
And then, so then the doctor replay, he asked her, do you want to hear the tapes? And he played one for her. She said, stop. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear that. It's creeping me out. But she continued her treatment without going and visiting that stuff. Got better, left the treatment, yada, yada. But it changed him and his wife's life forever. His wife is a social worker.
Oh.
And so they started to do seminars and talks and working with people around past life regression. So this is all, you know, many people have had relationships with spirits, you know, and I don't know if it's real time or not, you know, but it's real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they can say that they had that experience, and you can't tell them that it's not.
No,
yeah,
no, because there's just so many stories that overlap. Kelly Ann, we got to wrap it up. We only have a couple of minutes left. Mm-hmm. Listen, will you come back, please?
Yes.
If you feel comfortable sharing your 40 minutes, yeah. So we just told a beautiful stories, because now we have it, and the next chapter is the farewell,
mm-hmm.
and it opens like this. And now it was evening, and Almitra the seeress said, blessed be this day and this place and your spirit that has spoken. And he answered, was it I who spoke? Was I not also a listener? I can't. So you and your whole, this is his dying. Now is a whole new, I got to read the book over again, y'all.
Yes. And then I just want to point out in the beginning when he says that the moment of departure, also the moment of gathering. Because what do we do when we find out that that's happened and that's on the brink?
Kellyanne.
We gather.
We got to hang out.
We do.
We only got so much. Oh, Lord, you're going to teach me. Oof, y'all, thanks so much for joining. Please say, give your own sign off to the folks. You got a message to them before you go.
yeah, just trust in your dreams. Be open, be receptive to what they're trying to tell you. Sometimes it's just really weird, nonsensical stuff. Don't get me wrong. But there, I do think that there's something to be gained in being receptive in the dreaming world.
Yes.
And don't be scared of what we all can't avoid. Nobody gets out alive.
Oh, Jim Morrison. We'll play that on the next time we get together. No one here gets out alive. Y'all know I love karaoke. I've just decided to turn the show into my own little karaoke moments. Thank you so much, Kellyanne.
Thank you.
Midnight Ideas on KMRD, 7 to 8 on Mondays. Love y'all. In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White, a.k.a. Dream Queen. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.